Welcome to the Carefree Black Nerd Podcast, a conversation about representation in comics and related media. I am your host, Rain Coleman, and this is issue 119? 18? One of them. What's up, y'all? I'm Ryan Coleman, the Carefree Blurred himself. In this issue, we're going to discuss the 2021 Western action, The Harder They Fall. Now, before getting into this issue, please be sure to rate the podcast those 5 stars on your preferred listening platform. And if you're feeling so inclined, hit me up on the social medias, TikTok and Twitter, otherwise known as X, at Carefree Blurred, IG and YouTube at Carefree Black Nerd. Go ahead and let's make this a conversation. Use that hashtag CBNPod when you're listening to this podcast. So The Harder They Fall, the 2021 Western action film. I enjoyed it. So I checked out the movie, of course, to add it to this leg of Carefree Black Nerd in the Western suite. Now, full disclosure, this was my first time watching this film, and the reason why is because when it first dropped back in 2021, I had every intention on watching this, and there were like 2 other projects I wanted to lump in together as like a little suite, and I never got around to it. And, you know, life gets in the way, other ideas and projects pop up, and I'm actually happy that I did not review it back then, because enough time has passed where any spoilers, I avoided them because people just weren't talking about the movie anymore. But also, I was able to consume it and enjoy it just without any maybe societal conversation. Any ongoing conversation about it. So I was able to just enjoy it, and that I did. Now, this film is a 2021 American Western film directed by James Samuel. This was his directorial debut, his feature directorial debut. He co-wrote the screenplay with Boaz Yakin. I believe I said that correctly. Now, the film stars Jonathan Majors, Idris Elba, Zazie Beetz, Regina King, Delroy Lindo, Lakeith Stanfield, R.C. Seiler, Danielle Deadwyler, Edie Gathegi, and Dion Cole. Now, if you don't know by now, now the reason for me adding this film to the Western suite is that this is one of the few Westerns whose principal cast members are all black. Its characters are based on real cowboys, lawmen, and outlaws of the 19th century American West. Now, this is important, because if you've been following the Western suite so far, a lot of the information in previous episodes should, you know, give you a little bit more context into what we're discussing today. Now, I want to be clear, this is a quick discussion. It is not a review. I'm not going to go in depth and in detail with every single scene like I've done in past episodes and past projects, but there will be spoilers. So if you have not seen The Harder They Fall and you don't want to be spoiled, go ahead and maybe check out the other episodes or watch it and come back, but there'll be light spoilers. So The Harder They Fall is directed by James Samuel, and I'm going to take a minute to discuss James. Now, James is born in July of 1979. He's also known by his stage name, The Bullets, B-U-L-L-I-T-T-S. Now, James is a British singer, songwriter, music producer, and filmmaker from London, England. Samuel has a cinematic element to his music and has accompanied most of his releases with a short film. His studio album titled They Die by Dawn and Other Short Stories was released in July of 2013. The album was supported by the singles Close to You, Close Your Eyes, featuring Lucy Liu and J Electronica. Now, the reason why this is important is because James is that dude. So, though this is my first time watching The Harder They Fall, I felt like I knew what was going on. Not in the sense that I predicted the movie or anything, but I have, just this past January, watched The Book of Clarence. James has a very particular style and sound, And it is mirrored in The Harder They Fall, and it is the same in The Book of Clarence. And I did not realize that we're dealing with some sort of interconnected universe, not in the like comic book X-Men, Iron Man, Avengers sort of way, but more or less like a package or project, a package of a project that is different but the same. So the moment that clicked for me, that was a bit of an Easter egg, that had I saw this first, the second movie would have maybe made more sense. But because I saw the second one first and then I went back and watched this, I caught the Easter egg, which is there's a scene where two of the characters are kind of bickering, and I think it was RJ and Edie, and they were bickering about something. Yeah, it was them, because RJ was like, something, yeah, the Book of Clarence. And then Edie was like, there is no Book of Clarence and something. I was like, okay, I got my little nerd fixed. The fact that it was foreshadowed in this movie, so that's cool. And then those of you who don't know, I am an author, and I write, and I love books, novels. No matter the genre, I love it when the characters or places connect them. Like if you have two standalone books, but maybe the cousin who didn't get a lot of screen time in the first book now is a main character in the second, or maybe there's like a bakery that everyone goes to, something that just kind of loosely connects projects. That's what I enjoy. So when I heard him say the Book of Clarence, oh, I was sold. I was ready to go. So James, I'm noticing that I can probably say I'm a fan or a stan of his. I enjoy his projects. Now, I don't know, with him being a director, I don't know how deep his roots go into these projects. If it's simply I'm a director and I've contributed music and produced, like if that is the extent, great. If it's more than that, even better. And shout out to him and everybody involved, because both films to me were an experience. Now, James did direct The Harder They Fall. And this movie premiered at the BFI London Film Festival on October 6, 2021. It received a limited release on October 22, 2021, prior to streaming on Netflix on November 3rd. The film received a generally positive reviews for its ensemble cast, as well as Samuel's direction and score. And the score did score. Samuel did what he needed to do. He did it. So I guess as briefly as I can put it, the plot, 11-year-old Nat Love is eating dinner with his parents when Rufus Buck and his associates Cortez arrives. Nat's father begs Buck to spare his wife and son, but Buck shoots and kills both Nat's parents and then carves a cross into his forehead. 20 years later, Nat Love finds and kills Cortez. Meanwhile, his partners ambush the Crimson Hood gang and steal their haul from the recent bank robbery. The lone survivor tells them that $25,000 that they have stolen belongs to Buck. Love travels to meet his former lover, Mary Fields, and who runs a chain of saloons. And it will stop there with the like actual synopsis or plot. So with this film, everyone is beautiful. Everyone played their part. It was so immersive that I, even watching it from my phone and then from my TV and like sitting there, it was one of those films that really pulled me in. You know, you can watch something, and maybe this is just me, but y'all let me know. You can watch something, you're like, oh, this is good, I'm enjoying this. But you are, like, it never leaves your mind that you're watching a show. And not to say that I watched this movie and I thought I was in the Wild Wild West, because that's not it. But watching this felt very different from, like, let's say watching Superman. You know what I'm saying? Like, Superman is a good show and I enjoy that. But like this, I was a little bit deeper in the movie. So with this stat cast, you have very beautiful people acting their behinds off. But I think one of the important things that I took from this is a principal black cast. This movie and The Book of Clarence did something for me personally. It made me more interested in something that otherwise I may not have spent the time and energy looking into. So I grew up watching westerns and like old school Turner Classic movies, and I've always enjoyed them, but they've never hit with me where it was like, oh, I just have to get a hold of a western. I have to watch something. I think the closest I probably came was the Wild Wild West movie with Will Smith back in the, what was that, the late 90s, early 2000s. But again, a lot of that was seeing this black man in this western steampunk-ish movie, and like the fun and adventure and comedy affiliated with it. And I was much younger, so there's that. But this movie pulls on the western element, and then the Book of Clarence. I promise not to get too deep into it, but the Book of Clarence pulled in the religious aspect. And these are both important to me because a lot of stories and projects and movies and books and things that we consume are not marginalized people, people of color, black people do not maybe get the same push as our white counterparts. And so some things can be viewed as, oh, that's white people stuff. And it happens a lot. But I think that this movie, for me anyways, makes me want to see more movies like this. Now, again, I am a Western enjoyer. I won't say enthusiast, but I like a good Western. But this felt different. This felt colorful. This felt, I don't know, it just felt different. And a lot of that could simply be James and how him and the team put the movie together, or it could just be that we're seeing a story that's told with some black folks in it. And it could very well be, well, I know it was a good story, but this is something that I would like to see even further than a principal black cast. Like, what about indigenous folks of that time? Like, where's that Western style story of their story and what happened then? What about, you know, there's so much that can be told, and this is the purpose and the point and the why we should have diversity in story and storytelling. The same thing with Book of Clarence. It took, and this won't, I won't, I don't think I'll get into any spoilers. If so, I'll announce them. But with the Book of Clarence, it took stories of the Bible, and it's like it told a story within there. So what I gather from watching the Book of Clarence is that everything in the Bible happened as is. However, this story of this movie was told within those limitations. Like, you, it's like almost like a fan fiction, and I really enjoy that because, again, you're getting a story that most people know, and if you don't know beat for beat, you understand the broad strokes enough to be immersed in this world, but it's giving you a different cultural perspective of said stories, and I just enjoy that. And I think Sam James and his team did a really good job, and the same degree of excitement that I had when watching the Book of Clarence is exactly, if not more, what I had watching The Harder They Fall. He's two for two with me. So in my house, double platinum. So with this movie, there is a lot of stuff going on. So it's 2 hours and 19 minutes, and every single minute was filled with something. I will say, I don't think you could eliminate any scene in this movie. Now, you may be able to like kind of cut it down a bit if you just wanted to have a shorter runtime, but there's not a scene in this movie that you can eliminate, and the movie still works the same. There's a part of it that felt very X-Men, but also like, what was it? It felt when they Rufus's gang was breaking him out of the train. That felt like a scene in one of the X-Men movies, and this isn't like, oh, it copied it so bad. No, it was really good, but it felt like one of those scenes, and I just thoroughly enjoyed that. Lakeith Stanfield, as the Cherokee dude, he did really good too. The one, I won't even say issue, but one of the things that concerned me initially was Regina, because Trudy, she was phenomenal in the movie, But there was a lot of her speaking that I think her voice was heavier in this movie. But with that, I could not unhear Riley and Huey Freeman. Because she's the voice behind the Boondocks characters and I'm hearing her, I heard her and it didn't take me out, but there was a time or two where I was like, oh, I'm seeing, this is Riley, this is Huey, this is not Regina, this is not even. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but it was something that, like, initially I had to adjust to that. And I don't think that is any flaw in the movie. That's really just me and probably anyone else who has seen Boondocks as much as I have. So that was something. The music was phenomenal. The score was amazing. James has a way of including music and the right songs and the right version of those songs. Like, oh my God, there was a lot of reggae in this movie and it freaking fit. Like, this was damn good. I'll say this. This is going to be a bit of a spoiler for the Book of Clarence. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When I watched the Book of Clarence and they performed to Nights Over Egypt, I lost it. The selection of music that James and whoever else decides to include in these films is so freaking good. Like, it enhances a lot of the movie, the versions that they put in there, the music themselves, and also where it almost kind of feels like it's bending your expectations for that particular genre, that particular style of movie. Like, how you play Nights Over Egypt in a biblical retelling of sorts, but it also fits perfectly. Like, come on, what are you doing? So I'm a fan. James, you killed it. And I know Sean Carter is affiliated with it too, so I guess shout out to him. But the movie, for it to be 2 hours and 19 minutes, it felt long, but it felt full. I felt satisfied once it was done. There was nothing about this movie that made me say, well, fuck this movie. And I'll say it had its comedic parts, its comedic elements to it. But I love the way, going back to the all black principal cast, that you're exploring some of these Western style stories. You got the saloon, you got the gunfights, you got the horses, you got the shootouts. Gunfight specifically, like inside of a city, inside of a saloon, and the like shootouts, like the people robbing banks, and then there being shootouts for you trying to trying to escape, you know, with your life and stuff. I'll say the one real issue I had with this movie is not signature to this movie, but I was like, okay, what the hell are y'all doing? I hate it when you have an action movie, there can be a spy, there could be a wartime movie, anything, but you'll have two opposing forces, the antagonist and the protagonist, and all of a sudden, even though the antagonist has 5,000 henchmen with 6 million guns, nobody can land a hit. But the protagonist, down on their luck, arm broken, foot, ankle broke, gun wound in their gut, but they got one little millimeter gun with 3 bullets and they taking out everybody. That pisses me off so much. There were points in this movie where I was like, there's no way that Rufus, big bad Billy badass Rufus, who got everybody shook and scared, you didn't collect the different groups of people to be on your side as your soldiers. There's no way all these people don't know how to shoot. What are we doing? I was like, y'all played too much. So it isn't signature to the movie, but I was like, nah, y'all killing me with this. Now, there was some moments that I was like, okay, I could see that. And I know that it really goes to like the skill of the protagonist, like, oh, they're so skilled and good, whatever. But man, I was like, y'all better quit playing in my goddamn face. Y'all could shoot, hit something. So that's like probably my biggest gripe with the movie. Well, and no, I have another one. So Zazie Beetz, Stagecoach Mary, her character. Now this, I don't know if it's a full issue, but there was a part of the movie, and when I look at the full runtime, I don't know if it was that long, but there's a part of the movie where she's treated like a damsel in distress. And it kind of bugged me, but then kind of not. So a lot of this hinges on Nat and his, Nat Love, played by Jonathan Majors, and his character arc, his growth, where he's the main character. And his parents were murdered. And so, of course, now he's older and he's going after the men that did it. And we find out him and Stagecoach married and, you know, had a little something, something, like, you know, thing, or whatnot. And so, you know, that's his girl. He's her guy. And she makes the decision to go into town after Rufus has been released or escaped or whatever he did. And he's back running Redwood. And she's like, oh, I'll go and I'll, you know, ask him to buy one of his saloons or something, because, you know, she got a whole bunch of them, whatever. And they pretty much beat her up. And I'm like, girl, you didn't see this coming. Because Rufus was like, sis, my people just got robbed of all their money. Now you popping up randomly from tons of miles away trying to buy my saloon? Like, girl, get real. And they whooped her butt. But there's a part of it where when she's captured, it's almost like they didn't fridge her, because they didn't kill her though, to move his story forward. And that story really started when his parents were murdered. So I guess kind of talking through it, it's not fully an issue, but I kind of feel like they sidelined her for a bit. But the other reason that makes me not as upset about that is because, like, it's a Western, and this is like something that happens in Westerns. Like, your girl is stolen and then she's laid on the train tracks with your best friend and you can only save one. And like, so like that whole thing, issue that I might have with it, I'm willing to like not really push too hard, because it fits within the trappings of Westerns. And she got to whoop some ass outside of that. Zazie Beetz did a lot of fucking butt whooping. Though she looks nothing like Stagecoach Mary, but, you know, that's a story for another day. So that was one of the things that I was a little frustrated with, but I think talking through it, I may not be as frustrated with it. I don't know. I was a little irritated at her even suggesting, oh, I'll go buy his such. Girl, they coming after yo, dude. They know you. So the movie itself was pretty light. It was, I want to say it was like a comedy, but there was some lighter elements to it until a certain point. And what I liked about this is I get invested with movies, TV, and all that, and characters and like continuity and like dissecting them and just enjoying the art of film. And with this movie, that happened. But because this isn't like, let's say, a X-Men comic or a Bat Family comic, or so, it's not something that we have in mass where we can simply point to, oh, this is the Batman Who Laughs, or this is the Long Halloween, or this is the Phalanx Covenant, or this is, I don't know, any other storylines where we could be like, oh, I kind of sort of know what's happening. I could feel that there were going to be some deaths, but this movie had some deaths that rocked me to my freaking core. And it's not that I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. Cause I felt there was some coming even from the beginning of the film. And when there was someone, I guess, that did not die, and I was like, okay, once I realized they probably weren't going to die, I was like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. If they were to be the one to go, the emotional weight isn't there. That's more or less just murder for murder's sake. Woo! But when we got to, and again, spoilers for this doggone movie, but when we got to RJ's death, I had a reaction. Like, I'm watching it and it's like when you watch a car accident live. It's like, oh, shit, what's going on? It was because the way that they presented it, it was, oh, my goodness. But what I do like about this film, and that kind of ties into the death, is that with both sides, the antagonist and the protagonist, I feel like you only get the antagonist because Nat is the main character. If this movie opened up with, let's say, starting at Stagecoach Mary's saloon and just like covering everyone, you couldn't you could, I guess, still fall on Rufus being the villain, but like truly both sides were charismatic, and there was a point where you could root for both of them. Because like specifically the breaking out Rufus from his cage, which was so disgusting. The way the scene opens, you're like, okay, they're the bad guys. Rufus's gang is the bad guys. They're the robbers. They're taking over this train. They bad, blah, blah, whatever. Then you get to a point where, like, it's revealed they're breaking Rufus out. And so, okay, we know that. And we're still like, Rufus is the bad guy. We know he killed somebody, you know, the parents or whatnot. So fuck him. But then there's a moment where the soldier or officer who's on board, who has the keys, he talking shit to Rufus gang. And they're like, you didn't wonder why you of all people were picked to transport this criminal or whatever the fuck she said. And he was like, what are you talking about? He was like, you are an embarrassment to the U.S. government, and we've been sitting here to take care of you. We are pardoned. And Regina's character pulls out this contract that shows that Rufus and his gang are pardoned, and they just gotta kill this man. And it's like, damn, they're villains up until this point. I mean, I guess they're still technically villains, but it's not like they did this shit just being funny. Like, and then you also have to deal with, like, the American, America at this point. Clearly, racism is alive and well. It's still alive and well today, but it's very, I'm trying to, like, temper my excitement, because it was just, I just feel like, even though Rufus's gang is the bad guys, the big bads for all intents and purposes, even their badness, so to speak, is I could see you having being justified. Because if you boil it down to its core, Rufus and his crew, their desires are to have a piece of this American dream for them and their people, a town for them and these black folks to live in peace. They know that there's racism out there. They know that there's violence out there, and they know that they're safe in this town. And whatever they had to do to get it, to make sure that these people were safe and okay and had their own piece of something, they did it. Rufus never felt like, to me, though he, you know, had his crew who robbed banks and all that, he never came off, and his immediate group never came off as in it for the money. Like, they were in it for, this is so odd. So, you know, you can have a villain who's just evil for evil's sake. I'm just evil. I want to rule the world because I'm evil. Versus, like, let's say a Thanos, who you don't necessarily want to rule the world, but you want to eliminate half of the population so that the other half can thrive. And that's kind of what I got, because even in those moments where Rufus and his crew was like shaking folks down and getting money and even putting taxes on the citizens, it never felt like, we're doing this so we could be rich. It felt like, you motherfuckers don't understand, I'm trying to help you out. Yeah, he was still a bad guy, but it never felt like, oh, I'm just this evil dude who just got money and I want to get more and just be rich. It did always feel like they had a larger plan that they were trying to execute, but they were just using their own kind of means versus like being nice to everyone. Like, fuck that noise. We're going to rob banks and invest it in ourselves. And I enjoyed that, because even with Nat's crew, the Nat Love crew, I don't know that there's an argument of them being bad, but I do feel like those were two sides of the same coin. Because there was one, the first scene where Nat killed that, the guy who was with Rufus when he killed his parents. He killed him in a church, and then he threw the body down and gave it to the pastor and was like, here, turn him in. You'll get $5,000 for you and your church. And the pastor was like, well, why don't you do it? And he was like, because I'm worth $10,000. And I was like, oh, okay. First of all, great storytelling and perfect dialogue. And that was cool. And so it leads you to believe or to understand that there were things that Nat's crew was doing that were not, that was not seen as admirable or stand up either, because you are also wanted. You know what I'm saying? So I think him and Rufus were pretty much two sides of the same coin. And so when we did go back to the murder of RJ's character, it hurt seeing him, but it also hurt because both crews were charismatic and interesting, and you were, I don't want to say rooting for them both, but you were very invested to see what happens, who comes out on top, who wins. Of course, it's going to be the quote-unquote good guys, but it's also like this is a Western that we haven't seen before. Rufus could very well be the big bad who wins in the end. And so Lakeith's character, the Cherokee guy, him and RJ's character were kind of in this, not a competition, it was a one-sided competition of who was fastest. And so when the murder happened, it was just like, bro, you're not playing fair. You was somebody who I liked up until this point, and you still got away. That's not fair. You need to suffer. And it was, oh my God, the whole movie just really weighed heavy on my heart. There was a lot going on, and I think that this is a very good movie. I'm sure there's another version that would have come out if, you know, you changed one or two different things, and I'm sure there was stuff left on the cutting room floor, but for this to be the final project that we got for this Western, I think it met all of the trappings. It did a very good job telling a story, and it set you up to fall for these characters and to wonder what happens when the credits roll, which, chef's kiss. So all in all, really good movie, really good Western. And with everything that's been discussed so far in this Western suite, from Lobo and being the first like black cowboy in comics, and then dealing with the history of black cowboys, cowgirls, cowhands, and all of that, and even the DNA of cattle pulled from Africa and Europe in the American West, like a lot of that, the research for that and the continuing reading that I've done on my own really made this movie so much richer than if I had just watched it without that knowledge. And it's not to say it wouldn't be good, because I, again, enjoyed the heck out of this. But I think knowing that, tell me this, when you're listening to this episode, use the hashtag CBNPod. If you have seen The Harder They Fall and you've been here since the first episode of the Western Suite, tell me if that added knowledge of black cowboys and cowgirls in the American West helped to enhance your experience or your understanding, or if it's just like, no, dude, it was just an entertaining episode and that's that. But either way, let me know. So yeah, that's, oh my God, this was so good. And I'll say that the music, let's go to the music for a second. Something that James does so well in both films, The Harder They Fall and The Book of Clarence, the music sucked me in. There was a lot of reggae music in The Harder They Fall, and it was a lot of music that, again, maybe didn't meet the genre expectations for the music in this genre, and it only helped to enhance the movie even more. And I'll say this, I think James and crew have really done a good job with both of these soundtracks at bringing soundtracks back. I don't know if you guys remember, like in the 80s and 90s, when movies had those soundtrack albums to the movie and they were really good and you could play them like you would play just any other album. That's what these two are for me. Now, you may have to be in a certain mood to listen to one, but I do think that these stand alone on their own really well, especially now The Harder They Fall, having those skits added into the album that were sound bites from the movie, but they did a good job at like being peppered throughout and coming right before and right after songs, like more like a bridge. I don't know. It just, it made me feel like those 90s soundtracks. That's what it is. So, and I've been playing The Book of Clarence since I've seen the movie. Like that album has been in rotation, and so The Harder They Fall, this one will be added as well. So shout out to everyone working with the music, because my goodness, overall, this is a movie I would recommend whether you like Westerns or not. I think if you like action, this is for you. If you like Westerns, this is for you. If maybe you haven't seen a Western and you're like, oh, I've never really been interested, I think that this is something you should watch. Because if you like this, even though there's a heck ton of Western films out there that do not include black people, I still think that if you watch this, it might get you to, you know, look at some other Western movies and shows and see if there's something that you like as well. Because this was done really, really well. So, again, kudos and shout out to the team. What I will say is that I had a, like, emotional reaction watching both of these films. And I know a lot of it had to do with the music. But I will say that I think both movies, The Book of Clarence and The Heart of They Fall, did a really good job at making you invested enough. Now, this is just me and my personal opinion. Invested enough that when the credits rolled, you know that more happened. It's not like, oh, I watched the movie, that's the end, let's go. No, when the credits were rolling, you know that whatever these people had going on right before they got off screen, that is still happening. And it felt lived in a way that if we never get another installment of this movie, great. If we get more, even better. And then it also ended in a way where there could be more. I absolutely love that. With someone standing atop a hill watching the heroes disperse, someone who you maybe thought we had seen the last of. So if we get The Heart of They Fall too, great. If we don't, good too. I'm not really worried, but it does feel like when those credits went up, life continued on. And it made me like really consider like what happened next. And I like that, because it's one thing to be like, everything happened, now everything is over and we're walking into the sunset. But there's a whole nother thing to be like, we're shook, we didn't kill, half our crew is dead, and then the crew that's here is kind of a hodgepodge of characters who they work, but they kind of need the other characters to make them work fully. And then like now they're going off away and like, okay, how does this pairing work? What happens with you now? And so it, I will say that at the end of this movie, I had a lot of questions, not questions for lack of good storytelling, but questions like, damn, I wonder. And I think that's what you want. Whatever type of creator you are, be it, you know, comics, be it movies, vlogs, whatever, you want people to want more, but you want people to also, you know, talk about your stuff. You want them to have questions and thought-provoking conversations, even if it's not, if it's just like, no, oh, shit, I wonder what kind of boots he gonna wear, you know, whatever it is, you want people talking about it. And that's what I feel like this movie did. Now here's another question. If you've seen the movie and you're like, man, this was trash, you have more of an emotional reaction than anyone who's ever watched this movie, like, that's fine too. But I still want to know, like, what are your thoughts on the film? Because I'm raving about it because I like it. But even if you're someone who didn't like it, I'd like to know, like, what is it about the movie that maybe did not resonate with you? And if that's something signature to this movie, or if it's something that, you know, these types of movies or tropes that you see overall, it's just not really your flavor. Because, of course, I would watch it again, and I'm going to watch it again, and I would, of course, recommend this movie. So, yeah, that's that. So let me know, what are your thoughts? How do you feel? How do you feel about The Heart of They Fall? How do you feel about The Book of Clarence? We could sneak that in there if you've seen that as well. If you have any questions for me about either movie, maybe something that I didn't answer or that I brought up here that, you know, had another question in your head, let me know. Use that hashtag CBNPod. We're going to keep exploring the West, the cowboy, cowgirl, countryness of it all, and how that interacts with blackness and how we have been doing this thing for since the beginning. And you know, the mainstream look of it is not always us. So all that being said, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope that you all are having a great month and great week, great evening, all that good stuff. And hit me up on the social medias, and until next time, stay carefree, stay nerdy, stay geeky, and whatever you do, if your rival gets broken out of their prison cell, do your best to do a 21 and me so that you can make sure that